Chickens are a little bit different because for the most of the other species, we acquire a lot of microbiome from the mother during the birth. But in chickens, you collect the eggs, right? And the eggs, for most commercial, if your backyard, it may be a little different, but for most commercial purposes, the eggs are collected at the breeder farm. The eggs are then transported to the hatchery where they're incubated, right? So when the chicks hatch, they do not have access to the mother for the transfer of the microbiome, right? So for the most part, they acquire the microbiome from the hatchery environment.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Kemin invites you to optimize animal feed quality and safety with our portfolio of solutions. Learn more at kemin.com/AG. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge.
Welcome to the Feed Science Podcast brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Carlos Campabadal from Kansas State University. I'm a feed and grain storage specialist, and I'm dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions from the Feed Science Podcast. So please get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episodes. So it's a pleasure to have Dr. Marianne Amalarujo from the Associate Professor in Department of Animal Science at the University of Connecticut. So with this, I would like to welcome you, and it's a great pleasure to have you here. And if you could please just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are, a little bit of your background. I know that you have your master's and PhD food microbiology, DVM from India, and just kind of get a head start on that. Welcome.
Yes, like you mentioned, I did take a circuitous route to where I am today. So I did start off going into veterinary medicine. But while I was doing that, I was more interested in the research aspect of it and not the clinical practice. So that's when I went into research. And what really interested me was the David and Goliath situation where, these small bugs that you can see, but they can knock you off. Mm-hmm. So that's where my interest in microbiology started. And I am one of my hobbies is foods, right? Trying different foods. So then, food and microbiology was a perfect marriage for me to go forward. So that's when I did my master's in food microbiology, followed by my PhD. And then I did a postdoc again in molecular food microbiology in Purdue. And then I came back to UConn as a faculty in 2013.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. I'm actually a Purdue alumni. I did my PhD
in
culture and biological engineering there. So that's we have something there in common besides the food side. Great. Well, no, this is great information, and I'm pretty sure all of our audience are very excited to learn more about you and your work there at the University of UConn. Can you just kind of like maybe start telling us a little bit about your work there since you started there at UConn on your research and other duties that you have there at the university?
So you have research and teaching appointments. You also have service. So in terms of my research, my focus is on molecular food microbiology. The goal of my program is to use natural approaches using a One Health perspective, right? Healthy humans, healthy planet, healthy animals. So in all of my work, the goal is to use natural alternatives. And primarily, I work with poultry. So when we talk of natural alternatives for poultry, there are a lot of feed ingredients, feed supplements that are available to poultry. One, the goal is to support and improve on production. At the same time, the microbiology aspect of it is to reduce foodborne illness.
That's a topic that is very important. I mean, for us, on the feed side and feed manufacturing, and it's very important here in the United States, following the Food Safety Modernization Act for several years now these days. And something very important, like you said at the beginning, the David and Goliath, I mean, the little things that we don't see and they could really knock you. And I've been there, and I think we've all been there, give or take. So that's something very important. So for our audience, of course, we want to hear your feedback. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know. Put it in the comment section. I'm pretty sure that we could get Marianne to answer them accordingly later on. So as I know on your work, I know that a lot of your main topics or focus have been on probiotics, especially in promoting poultry production and, of course, like you mentioned, health and food microbiology, foods and safety. Can you tell us a little bit more about what is your current work and what have you focused a little bit more in terms of that, of course, being something that comes from natural resources?
So I use a farm-to-fork approach. Again, I mean, that's what USDA uses, or farm-to-plate. So what we have done, probiotics is not new to the poultry industry, right? Poultry industry is one of the foremost proponents of probiotics, using probiotics. So what we have done in my research program is a lot of the focus in the poultry industry is on the adult bird, right? So if you talk of feed supplements, they're provided to the adult birds during grow out phase to improve growth, to improve health, right? But a lot of our focus has been on prenatal, right? So the developing embryo. With any species, for example, with humans, right? We know that the health of the mother is important because it supports fetal development, which is important for the baby after the baby is born. So the same thing is true for chickens as well, right? So if the embryo develops well, it's healthy. When it hatches, the chicks are healthy. If they're healthy, they perform better, right? So that has been kind of the central theme. So okay. What we do is, so we try to start with the hatching eggs, see how best we can support the growth of the embryo, because proper development is also required for hatchability. So if the embryos don't develop well, the hatchability can also go down, which is a concern for the poultry industry, right? So if you look at that, let's say I incubate 100 eggs, right? And at the end of the day, only 40 of them hatch. So think about all the cost that has gone into, particularly energy costs associated with it, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then it's not just at that time, going forward too is an issue, right? So we try to start with the eggs and end up with the adult bird. And in each of these steps, we use probiotics, which are healthy bacteria, which in fact, if you eat any kind of fermented foods are considered to be healthy because besides, well, they are very tasty as well. But besides, you know, their taste and their nutritive properties, they're also loaded with a lot of good bacteria that is helpful for us. Right? So these are probiotics. And in fact, a lot of the probiotics we have in the market have actually been isolated from food and dairy foods, right?
Yes.
So what we do is we use probiotics at each step. So we see how best can we support the embryo. So embryo growth is good. So they hatch, and not just hatch. When they hatch, we get good quality, healthy chicks.
Okay.
Right. And then we see what happens to them during the grow out phase. Is there anything else we can support to improve on what they're doing right now?
And this is very, very, very important information. I mean, I think this is something very important to for people in the poultry industry and overall, any of the animal science production areas is something. So for anybody, please, again, leave us a comment if you'd like to know more about our topic, and we'll be sure to be let you guys know all the information. So following this, can you expand a little bit on how do you support the establishment of a healthy microbiome in the hatching and beyond? I mean, you were saying that you want to support that all the way to adults and just to reduce the loss and think about also the feasibility. I mean, part of all integrated now these days that we have everything from genetics, the whole value chain, all the way, like you said, all the way from farm to fork, that is key now these days.
You know, microbiome has been in the news quite a bit. We all know that we carry a lot of organisms, and these organisms are important because they keep us healthy, right? So when that is an imbalance in your microbiome, that's when you are at risk of falling sick. So the same thing is true of all animals as well, right? And chickens are a little bit different because for the most of the other species, we acquire a lot of microbiome from the mother during the birth. But in chickens, you know, you collect the eggs, right? And the eggs, for most commercial, if your backyard, it may be a little different, but for most commercial purposes, the eggs are collected at the breeder farm. The eggs are then transported to the hatchery where they're incubated, right? So when the chicks hatch, they do not have access to the mother for the transfer of the microbiome, right? So for the most part, they acquire the microbiome from the hatchery environment.
I personally didn't even think about that now these days, but yeah, I didn't want to interrupt you, but it just something that hit my mind, and I think it's important to also for the rest of the audience, yeah.
Yeah, and then once the chicks are transported, right, then they get the bulk of the microbiome, again, from the environment of the farm, which may not necessarily be a very healthy microbiome to acquire, right? So what we did is, so when we're looking at growth, another interest was the microbiome because the birds need that. So when we deliver, so what we figured out in one of our recent studies is when we deliver probiotics to the developing embryo, we can also deliver the probiotics to the hatchling.
Okay.
One of the key things about the research program is we wanted to develop non-invasive ways, right? Because if we want even commercial producers to incorporate it, we want small farms, medium farms, big farms, we don't want it to be invasive. So when we just delivered the probiotic to the hatching eggs, right? And then what we have figured out is the probiotics translocate into the developing embryo. And then eventually when the hatchlings hatch, they actually have the same bacteria in them. So by modulating the microbiome of the egg, you can actually modulate microbiome in the hatchling. So they start off with a good complement.
So this approach is, on my thinking, is probably a little bit different compared to how other people have approached it, correct? If I'm not mistaken.
So in most, some of the work that has been done with embryos is that they usually inject. They inject into the developing embryo either. So what we have tried to do is go away from that injection model.
In the invasive part, yeah.
Yeah. So we just spray them onto the eggs. That's all we do.
Okay. Okay. So you spray them in the egg and then, okay. And can you tell us a little bit more the difference between the injection and the spraying in terms of efficiency? I mean, so the audience can understand a little bit why your technique is so innovative and different compared to what traditionally others have done in the past.
You don't need any sophisticated equipment to spray.
Okay.
Right. So you just spray the eggs. You don't need any trained personnel to spray, right? And spraying is something that's commonly used, for example, to clean the hatching cabinet. Right? So spraying is something that is already being used in the industry. So you don't need anything additional. The other thing is sometimes when you inject, there are studies where there is reduced, that has caused embryonic mortality.
Yeah.
Because it is an invasive procedure, right? So you can get away from all of that. And what we have also shown is that by spraying, actually we have shown you can improve just as you inject it, just by spraying, we can still see improvement in embryonic growth, hatchability, and post-hatch performance. So why not use a non-invasive, user-friendly approach to get to the same results that you can when you inject?
And probably, and correct me if I'm wrong, that with not being non-invasive, I mean, of course, and just a spray, and without the equipment and everything that you mentioned and the technical person doing that, the feasibility is, you know, just the overall cost is a lot less, is more feasible, friendly. And I don't want to touch that topic, but I think it's important to mention also that in terms of animal husbandry and everything is better, correct? I mean,
it's, yes.
And that's what the consumers want at the end of the day too, correct?
Yeah, and the other thing is, so when in ovo injections are done when they do injections, right? So it's usually during the mid incubation phase, it's after day 10 or day 12 of incubation, right? Before that, you really cannot. But in our case, we provide the probiotics on the day the eggs are incubated, right? So that means we can also support early embryonic growth. And what actually we have seen in our studies is that actually it supports muscle development.
Oh, okay.
As early as day 7 and day 10 of incubation.
Oh, wow.
Right. So again, so you can actually kickstart everything from day one when the embryo is developing.
And since there's a spraying technique there, are they something related to specifically from the permeability of the egg itself overall that might be a factor? Do you have to consider or not necessarily?
Not necessarily, because, for example, let's talk about salmonella, right? Mm-hmm. Salmonella is a big concern for poultry. Salmonella on the egg. So the egg, the shell has pores, right? So the, technically, the shell has pores, and bacteria can move through the pores and get into the egg. So you don't need any special permeability for the bacteria to get into the egg. Just like any other bacteria will get in, probiotics are also bacteria, so they will get it.
They'll get it. Okay. And that's what I thought, but I wasn't sure. And I think it's important for the audience to
sure.
hear that. So, of course, our audience, if you like our topic, please put us a like, you know, and a thumbs up, because we really want to have you guys engage on what we are learning today. Very, very important information. Continuing about the topic, so how do you integrate this practice in the commercial setting overall with the current management practices that you see there in the hatcheries and incubation and hatcheries overall? And if there's any information that you could share about, not as, of course the company's doing it, but the name itself, but something there so the audience can see, hey, this is a technique that is definitely coming to stay.
Sure. So what we have done is we have tried to coincide our spraying with current practices in the industry. For example, right before the eggs are being set, the eggs are being handled. You have to handle the eggs to set them. So at that point, you can do spraying. The other point is around day 10, the eggs are candled. So you're going to handle the eggs. So you can spray at that time. So you don't have to go in and add an additional step, which you wouldn't do. Or around day 18, the eggs are transferred from the incubator to the hatcher. So the eggs are being handled again.
Yes.
So then you can spray then. So our timeline coincides with current practices in the industry of when the eggs are being handled. So that it's not an additional task, or it's not an additional ask of folks to do in addition to everything else that they have to do.
And that's great, because you're not disrupting, let's call it that way, the current practices. You're just adding
yes.
something that is in the benefit.
Yes.
And that just hit my mind when you're saying about the spray. So doing this technique, how many times do you have to spray the egg? Would that be at those three phases that you mentioned?
Yes.
Is there a variation in the solution that you're spraying throughout those the three different ones?
No, there is no variation. To make sure we can maintain a good enough probiotic population, that is why we are spraying it, you know, at those three times.
I'm just curious a little bit about that, and then I'll ask you something else. But how do you guys been measuring that success on the sprays, or what technique have you guys have, if it's something that could be shared, of course, from the scientific perspective?
In terms of maintaining the bacterial load, it's simple microbial enumeration, right?
Okay.
So when we spray, we also sample a number of eggs to make sure how much of the probiotic is available on the eggshell. And then in other studies where we are looking at Salmonella. So we have done the same thing because we want to develop a comprehensive approach that not only supports production, but also improves food safety.
Food safety.
Right. So so up till now, I have been talking about production, but we also do the same approach. But here we're trying to control Salmonella, starting from the egg to the bird. So in those times, we have sampled and we can recover significant populations on the eggshell. We also recover significant populations inside the egg.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
So exactly. So we know they do translocate inside.
Great. No. And that's, I know it's a little bit more in the scientific technique, but I'm pretty sure that the audience also on that. So for our audience, if you have learned something new today, please share the video. We appreciate if you guys do that. And then continuation here with Dr. Amala Ruja, we want to kind of like also ask you, I want to ask you a little bit more, what is the role of the stakeholders overall in this project? I mean, how's been the reception and the support for this? Because, you know, sometimes it's hard to break the traditional way things are done, even if they're good or bad, you know? So just learn a little bit more about that.
Sure. I'm really glad you asked those questions. So all of these projects are based on stakeholder feedback, right? So I work with extension partners. I personally do not have an extension appointment. So I have extension collaborators at UConn. So what we do is we start off by talking to stakeholders, right? So we have surveys, we have informal discussions, telephone calls, where we figure out what they actually need, what they want, what they have, what is working, what is not working. And so, and based on that is how we build our project. So the project starts with feedback from stakeholders.
Great.
Right? So when we had an initial polling, we talked about use of probiotics, and obviously poultry producers are like, yeah, we have been doing that. You know, we're okay with probiotics. Then we asked about method of application. We said, okay, what do you think about spraying? And then they said, yes, we would prefer spraying.
Of
right?
Course.
So that's how, you know, we built it. And then we have stakeholder advisory committees for each of the projects.
Oh, so, great.
You know, so then we can have real-time feedback from them. Right. So if we need to modify a certain protocol because they come back to us and say, that is not realistic.
Yeah.
You can do it for the sake of research, but if it's not, then we can go back to the drawing board and change how we do it so that at the end of the day, what we want to do is make sure it's applicable.
Great. No, this is very important. And myself, like I mentioned, I work in extension too, and more even outreach international too. But so this is a great example of a success when bringing innovative ideas, scientific criteria, research, and then working with extension to put it out there for the commercial purpose and overall, you know, because our universities here in the United States, like, you know, our role is teaching extension and research. So
yep.
this is a very important case of it. And we're really happy to hear that. And as we're concluding a little bit of our podcast is coming here at the end of the time, but anything else that you want to share specifically on this topic that you think is important for our audience to hear?
I'm really thankful to the stakeholders. You know, time, nobody has time, right? But then, you know, the interest and the time they provide and giving us the feedback. I know we send out a lot of surveys, which people don't want to take, but, you know, I really appreciate that. And of course, none of this would be possible without all of my lovely graduate students.
And I understand that too. So this is great. And you know, I appreciate that what you're saying for the grad students and the stakeholders and on that, because at the end of the day, that's what we're here for. So great. This is very important. And thank you for all this great information. For our audience here, please visit our site, wisenetics.com, and learn more about all of the other podcast segments that we have on poultry, swine, dairy, beef, feed mill, and of course, pet food.
It's time for our famous three.
Evonik Animal Nutrition is committed to ensure food security and safety while reducing the ecological footprint of animal farming. Its products and services use evidence-based solutions that seek to promote animal welfare and reduce reliance on natural resources. All this is underpinned by long-standing industry partnerships and deep customer understanding. Evonik's focus on efficiency, sustainable, healthy nutrition, and collaborations with livestock farming partners creates value for customers and consumers.
as we finish up this this podcast, of course, one of the things that we always like to ask our guests here today, if they could pretty much help us guide their audience on any specific book or information resource that you want to share on the area that, that you're an expert, of course, in this area of probiotics, food microbiology, food safety overall. What would you recommend somebody that wants to go more in depth on a technical level for it?
I would say that the Poultry Science Association puts forward interpretive summaries of research articles, and some of these are actually written by students. So I think that's a really good place to start. In terms of food microbiology, the International Association of Food Protection, IFP, mm-hmm. they have a wonderful student group that they have a lot of webinars that they showcase, which are free to attend if you're a member. That's a great place to get latest information and also to network and make those connections, which are important down the road.
Perfect. No, this is great information, and that I think works for anybody in the food, animal industry, and of course, the feed too. Besides agriculture, besides your work expertise, any other book that you recommend for anybody to learn and be better?
There's a book called As I Contain Multitudes.
Okay.
It's actually about the microbiome, but that's for anyone to read.
Okay.
That's interesting, I would say. It is not scientific, but it is science.
Great. And I think that's one that I need. Because if I go too scientific, I'll be totally off.
So that's a good one if anyone's interested in learning about the microbiome in a fun way.
Great. And then just to final thoughts there from you. You work in a university. You have grad students. Any advice to future professionals in your field on things, advice that you will give them to be successful in their career?
Don't hesitate to ask.
Okay.
There is no silly question. There is no wrong question. You ask.
Great.
Either you get a yes or you get a no. But I would say don't hesitate to ask. That's what I would say.
Great. Perfect. No, this is very important. And thank you very much for that. So with that, I personally would like to thank you for taking the time to attend this podcast and this all this great information. I know that we probably could keep talking for hours on this topic, but we always had that time limitation. So we appreciate your time giving us today. And with that, This concludes another episode of the Feed Science Podcast presented by Wisenetics. Thank you for joining us today. And please, for our audience, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on any future episodes. And if you enjoyed today's episodes, like I said a little bit earlier, please leave us a review, and because your feedback is very important for all of us. Until next time, this is Carlos Campabadal from the Feed Science Podcast signing off. Thank you very much.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.